This is Sports Saturday with Joshua Briscoe on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Never a dull moment throughout Kansas basketball. That's proven time and time and time again. And this offseason has, of course, been absolutely no exception. They've had something, it feels like, happen pretty much on a weekly basis, which is at least good news for us around here and good news for the crew over at fog.net. Kansas, or the Kansas sort of region of 247sports.com, always gives us a good excuse to talk to Michael Swain. You can follow him on Twitter at mswain97. You don't get a lot of time off, do you, Michael?
No, Scott works me way too much. Man, he goes on vacation. I got a cover for him. When do I get a vacation? That's what I'm wondering. I mean, I just need to ask God to get maybe a month, 2 months off.
I think that's great.
Probably fair for the amount of work that I do for him. But no, I'm joking.
It's very serious.
I enjoy doing all of this. I mean, I can't complain. Getting to write and talk about Kansas, I mean, that's just the best thing in the world. Can't complain about that.
And at some point, I might bully you into talking about Kansas football for like 30 seconds, but I definitely don't want to start there. I don't want to take the magic away that quickly. That's still interesting, just less so, because basketball, again, keeps giving us interesting stuff here. Since the last time we've talked, they've added two what I would say are going to be legitimate pieces. What was a bigger deal to you, Isaiah Moss transferring to Kansas as the grad transfer from Iowa, or the commitment from Jalen Wilson?
So I think if you look at kind of what's happened over the past month, I think you lose out on RJ Hampton. That was a guy that would have probably filled in at the two, a shooting guard that could create off the dribble and, you know, score a lot of points for you. I feel like Isaiah Moss is probably the bigger addition for this year's team just because of the shooting aspect of it.
Yeah.
You know, Jalen Wilson's a wing that can do a lot of things. You know, he's a good defender. He can create off the dribble. You know, he can score the ball, but the outside shot, you know, it could take a minute. And, it could be one of those things where he starts off maybe a little bit slow, and by the end of the season he's hitting down, you know, 37, 38% of his threes. But I think Isaiah Moss is more of a known commodity here. And I think the KU needs that consistency from outside, because if you looked at last year's team, that's something they didn't have. I mean, Latrell Vick would go on these hot streaks and would, you know, make eight threes in a game like he did, I believe, against Stanford. And, you know, but then also have games where he goes 1 for 5. And you just, the highs and lows of that made the offense so volatile for KU. I think that Moss, even though he may not be the most consistent scorer in point total, I think that consistency from three will at least allow them to space the floor around Udoka Azubuike, around Silvio De Sousa, and for Devon Dotson to use his freakish athleticism to get to the rim. As for Jalen Wilson, I think what he allows Kansas to do is be a lot more versatile. They can put him at the four next to Doak. They can put him at the four next to Silvio. He can even maybe play the two if you want to go with this just a huge lineup where you want to play a Tristan Anaruna, a 6'10 wing, at the three. Then you play Jalen Wilson at the two and Devon Dotson at the one. That's just a huge lineup right there. So I think, you know, Wilson allows KU to do a lot more and be a lot more versatile. But I think Moss is probably going to help KU a lot more on the offensive end.
Well, and so specifically with Moss for a second, because I think everything that you said as far as what Kansas needs the most rings very true, because it's funny to say this because it feels like there's been so much turnover and so much change, and then also so much in terms of returning guys that weren't a part of the team at least throughout, you know, the second half and beyond last year with Azubuike and De Sousa, both of them. But it feels very similar to the team we were talking about around this time last year. I imagine that it's probably pretty fair to have some of the same concerns that we had at this point last year, because it was, you know, what will LeGerald Vick be able to bring shooting-wise, and then it was nothing, and it was, you know, what can Charlie Moore bring shooting-wise, and it was nothing, and Quentin Grimes, that didn't pan out the way anyone expected it to. So I think that makes sense. Is it fair to say that KU's in a pretty similar place now that they were around this time last year?
I'd say yes and no.
Okay.
Because I think the biggest thing that changes is these guys aren't freshmen anymore, and you're not relying on freshmen. I think that was maybe the biggest issue, was the expectation for the freshmen coming in was so high that when they acted like freshmen, it's like, what is happening? We were supposed to be so good, or Kansas was supposed to be, you know, the number one preseason team, and they had such high expectations. But you kind of sometimes get so caught up in the, in the rankings in the talent level that you're like, wait a second, they're freshmen, they're adjusting to college.
Yep.
They have to figure out what it's like to go play at an Iowa State, to go play at a TCU. You know, you have to figure out those things. And I think that this team now has a great blend of just the veteran experience, guys like Doak, even Silvio to some degree, who's played in an NCAA tournament, who've gone deep into the Final Four and played in that dome. You know, they played in the big environments. Mm-hmm. But then you do also have some of that younger talent. You know, you have your Isaac McBride, your Tristan Anarenas, and even your Devon Dotson to some degree, some of the younger, super talented guys. But even Devon Dotson, I think he is the guy that's going to be more or less a litmus test for this Kansas team, because he's going to be the one with the ball in his hand
right.
for 30 minutes a game, and if not more. And if he is able to improve and be able to run the offense smoothly and not struggle on the road with the turnovers, I think the ceiling for this Kansas team is so much higher than last year's. But also, you're able to withstand an injury to Hugo Gazibuki with this team because you have Silvio de Sousa. Bill Self said David McCormick was one of the most improved players from the end of the season till now. I think there are a lot of things that I can see the similarities to last season in that you're like, oh, it's a super deep team. How are you going to be able to fit all these guys on the court? But they're a year older now.
Mm-hmm.
And you are more or less running back the same team and just fitting in a couple of new pieces that maybe even fit better with the current roster construction. And I think that that is probably what should encourage Kansas fans the most going forward.
And that's all fair. The evolution of the experience and I mean, because this time last year we were talking about Devon Dotson and Charlie Moore and trying to figure out, you know, who's going to get the majority of the time at point. And that feels literally like it feels hilarious now, because one of them is, you know, trying to be Frank Mason version two, and one of them is, you know, transferred once again. So that's very, very valid. I guess the thing that I'm thinking of is just the concerns around the shooting, because you have the big man depth, but a year older. Devon Dotson obviously is a huge evolution. That's super important. But like, we are kind of talking about Ochai Agbaji in a way. We're like, oh, we've seen him. I feel like the Agbaji conversation is a little bit similar maybe to LeGerald Vick, not with his fit in the team and all of that, but just like he's had some really good runs and some really crummy ones. And then, you know, we're talking about all these other guys that are coming in that we haven't seen do it for Kansas at the very least. Is the shooting the biggest concern at least still for you?
Yes, I would say that. And as for Ochai, if you look at his shot from last season and what he's kind of done to train that and to switch it, last season he had the ball basically like over his head.
Mm.
And now he's switched it to where it's basically right over his right elbow, which is where it's supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
And he says that it's able to make it more consistent from three. So if you're looking at Ochai, where he started off, you know, that first run that he was on, he was out of his mind from three. I don't remember the exact numbers, but he was just shooting so well from three. But then after that Oklahoma State game at home, that was when things kind of started to go downhill. I personally think it was because he was supposed to be a redshirt, and all of a sudden he's thrown into the fire of a Big 12, you know, title race, and all of a sudden every minute counts and every shot you take counts. That's fatiguing. And I think that toward the end of the season, his legs just weren't there, and that probably affected his shot a little bit. But I think that he's probably one of the guys, like you said, I like that with LeGerald Vick, where it's like, okay, what are you going to get from him on a night-to-night basis?
Mm-hmm.
I feel like you maybe could get more consistency from Ochai. But also, if you look at what he can bring for you on the defensive end, I think he does a lot more than what LeGerald Vick brought last year. You know, it's a much more of a, got to word this right, like a team player, I would say, like a team defensive player.
Uh-huh.
You know, he's going to help off. He's going to make plays. He's going to get in passing lanes. You know, LeGerald Vick just was not active on the defensive end. I think that Ochai is a guy that, on that end, can at least help a lot more. And when it comes to three-point shooting also, I'll be very interested to see how Tristan Anarenas shoots the three ball.
Hmm.
He shot, I think, one in the scrimmage that they had last Tuesday. It didn't go in. Isaac McBride is going to be an important piece as the backup point guard behind Devon Dotson. If he can make some threes, you know, come out and make one, maybe two a game, I think that's a bonus. I think that three-point shooting is still going to be a concern for this team, but I think they just have a lot more people that can make those threes than last season, where you're basically like, okay, if it's not coming from LeGerald Vick or Devon Dotson, it's not coming from Quentin. At the end of the season, it wasn't coming from Ochai, and it sure as heck wasn't coming from Marcus Garrett. But I think here you just have a lot more bodies that on a night-to-night basis you can roll with based on who's hot.
So you mentioned, I was just pulling up the article at 247sports.com, or you can go to fog.net for all the KU stuff specifically, with some of the takeaways from the scrimmage back on Tuesday. And, you know, just to show you where my head's at, I found out that there was a scrimmage on Tuesday whenever I was reading this article about the takeaways from the scrimmage. Listen, Chiefs minicamp was happening, and I was very busy. But what did you see from that, from the scrimmage, from the takeaways? You can read that article from Kevin Flaherty at Fogg.net with some written-out takeaways there. But did anything else jump out to you from that little glimpse of the team that you got? Like, how did DeSosa look?
Oh, okay. So I'm going to start off by saying this. Charlie Moore was on fire at the scrimmage last year. So, like, take everything with these scrimmages with a grain of salt.
Sure, fair enough. That is an incredibly good precursor.
So with Silvio DeSosa, he started taking some threes. They all came from the left corner. So that looks like right now that's his comfort spot, that left corner three. But he looks good, I think, for a guy that has not played a competitive college basketball game in, you know, what would it be, 15 months now? I think he looked pretty darn good. I think it's going to take a minute for him to maybe refine some of the inside skills, and maybe the outside shooting is what maybe comes to him maybe a little bit sooner, because you're able to practice that and you don't have to work on maybe, you know, the different counters in the post and being able to work your way through it in the middle of a live game. But I think that he's a guy that if he can show that he can maybe make, you know, not even like 35% of his threes, if he can just make 33%, like, that would be awesome for KU. Just to have some sort of spacing that at least is respectable, that one out of every three is going to go in. You know, if you can have that for Silvio, I think that's great. I'll be really interested to see, you know, how he fits next to Doak. In the scrimmage, they were with each other, actually. And so Silvio was spacing the floor for Doak, and I thought it looked okay. For Doak, you know, it was a scrimmage, and Allen Fieldhouse was not air-conditioned, so it was pretty hot in there. So Doak was, you know, taking his time getting up and down the floor, especially because it was a fast-paced scrimmage, you know, with Devon Dotson bringing the ball up for one team and Marcus Garrett bringing the ball up for the other team. So I think that, you know, for Silvio and Doak, you did get to see a little bit of the fit next to each other, but I'll be very interested to see if they play with each other another scrimmage later on.
Is Marcus Garrett the second point option whenever there needs to be a breather for Devon Dodson, if there's an injury or whatever? Does Marcus Garrett the next guy up?
No, I think it's Isaac McBride. I think honestly, I don't try to read a whole lot into like the roster construction of teams, but I think you maybe wanted to see a little bit of how do Devon and Isaac look together on the floor.
That makes sense.
And I think it looked pretty good, honestly. You know, Isaac McBride's a guy that can spot up and shoot from three. He didn't shoot all too well during the scrimmage, but in high school, I believe he set the record for most points all time in Arkansas State history. Could be wrong, but I think I remember that. So he's a guy that can shoot and score the ball. So maybe what happens is you run a little, you know, a two-point guard look where it's basically Devon can run the point, and then if there's a time where Devon's like, I'm, you know, going after this guy on the defensive end, give me a possession off on the offensive end, Isaac McBride can take the ball and create off the dribble. I thought that was something that McBride did really well, was creating off the dribble. I vividly remember, you know, one time where he had this nice just dribble combination that we got right by E.J. Elliott, a walk-on, and had a nice, like, over-the-head dish to David McCormick, who then dunked it. You know, I was overly impressed with how Isaac McBride was able to use, like, a burst of speed and side-to-side quickness to beat guys off the dribble and to get into the lane whenever he wanted. You know, Devon Dotson is really good at going straight line speed and crossing over and getting downhill, but McBride just side to side shiftiness is just on another level. I mean, it was awesome to see from a true freshman to have that confidence in your own ball handling to go after guys like that.
So, is there going to need to be? I know this is a little bit like in the weeds, I guess, because we're talking about, you know, the number two versus number three, like, point guard options for Kansas right now, and it's June. But is there going to need to be a bit of an earning of trust for him to get those possessions whenever he's coming in for Dotson? Because the thing with Marcus Garrett, like, I'm thrilled to hear that he's not the second best option as far as being able to play the point goes. But like, it feels like Bill Self loves Marcus Garrett, like, more than he loved, you know, having Tyler Self around. Like, it's childlike in the his adoration as a father for Marcus Garrett. And I feel like he would trust Marcus Garrett with, you know, the keys to the team, the keys to his car, the keys to his house, whatever. Is it going to take a minute, do you think, for that transition to be likely in Bill Self's mind? Or does he have enough tools? Does McBride have enough tools right now to be a guy that's just simply the clear and away second best point guard on this team?
Maybe. I think what it's going to take is the defensive end. because Bill Self is all about not giving up easy baskets. And I think that Marcus Garrett is really good at not giving up easy baskets. He keeps his guy in front of him. He's able to pick up steals. He's able to pick up steals off ball. You know, he does a lot of things on the defensive end that nobody else really on this Kansas team, guard-wise, can do. But I think that on the offensive end, that's where it kind of gets made up. Mm-hmm. And there could be games where, you know, your starting lineup, you know, could be, you know, whatever, and Marcus Garrett comes off the bench and is like, I'm going to replace whatever of the first three wings, or, you know, your 2 point guards, mm-hmm. and, you know, your third, your three. I'm just going to take out whoever is not bringing it on the defensive end and maybe isn't having it on the offensive end. I think it could take time for Isaac McBride to maybe earn that trust, like you said. I don't think he's going to play 25 minutes in the Champions Classic against Duke, mm-hmm. but I think maybe in Big 12 plays, maybe when you see him flourish, maybe a little bit more after he's had some time to adjust to college life, adjust to what Bill Self wants. But I think early on in the season, you may see Bill Self rely a little bit more on Marcus Garrett as you go through another tough non-conference schedule. Mm. But maybe once you get into Big 12 play, Isaac McBride's development will allow him to make a bigger impact than Marcus Garrett can on the offensive end, while not being as good as Marcus Garrett on the offensive end, because Marcus Garrett is awesome, mm-hmm. but maybe just being okay and yeah. being able to keep your guy in front of you and not give up easy baskets. Because at the end of the day, that's what Bill Self wants, is a team that is going to, you know, keep the opposition out of the paint and is going to, you know, create easy baskets on the other end. I think that Isaac McBride is a guy that can do that in transition with his speed and quickness, and even in the half court, creating off pick and roll, you know, creating for others off the dribble. I think that he can maybe do a little bit more on the offensive end than Marcus Garrett can, and that's honestly not saying much, because Marcus Garrett, you know, not being able to shoot the three really does limit him.
Right.
But I think maybe if you were to see Marcus Garrett come in and play more of a defensive stopper role and then come down on offense and not stay in the corner but act as a slasher off the ball, I think that early on in the season he could be the guy that is getting more of the minutes, and that wouldn't surprise me. But I think by the end of the season, Isaac McBride could be the guy that's getting those backup 2 minutes or backup point guard minutes.
I want to pivot off of the sort of smaller look at KU basketball in just a second, but the last thing on them altogether that I'm wondering is, who have we not talked about enough so far here? What name hasn't come up or hasn't gotten enough run just within the last, you know, 15 minutes in your mind?
Okay, so there's two guys, I think. First of all, I think
I'll allow it. I will allow. Go ahead. Let's go into this again. So, Michael, what are the two guys you feel like we haven't talked about enough yet today?
Okay, David McCormick, I think, is the first one.
Yeah.
So I think for him, Bill Self discriminates. He was introducing the players, and he introduced Mitch Lightfoot. I think you know him as Prison Mitch, which Twitter loves.
Yes.
But he introduced David McCormick as maybe the most improved player on the team. So I'll be very interested to see, you know, at late night in the fall, you know, when they play Duke, how does Dave McCormick look? Is he going to be sped up like he was, as, you know, as a freshman? Mm-hmm. Or is he going to be poised and refined, you know, and show a lot of growth? Because if he does, then you're looking at having to maybe take a red shirt for a Mitch Lightfoot maybe.
Yeah.
Because if McCormick can give you those good minutes, you maybe don't even need a fourth big, especially if the next guy I'm going to talk about, Tristan Annarunna, is able to show up and be productive. You know, I'm a lot higher on Tristan Annarunna than I think a lot of my fellow media members are.
Mm-hmm.
I'm enamored by anybody that is over 6'8" and can handle the ball, slash, and create. That's just what I am drawn to as a basketball, you know, guy that likes watching basketball. It's
sure.
a bigger guy that can create. So I think he's a guy that maybe early on in the year isn't going to have it. It's going to take him a minute to get used to what Bill Self wants. But maybe towards the end of the non-conference schedule, if he's a guy that starts to flourish, I would not be surprised if he gets a lot more minutes at the four and maybe even at the three, you know, alongside a Doak, you know, alongside a Silvio De Sousa. I think that he's a guy that maybe there's a lot of variance for what he could be as a freshman. He could be really good and impressed just because he can do so many things, but it may be one of those things where jack of all trades, master of none, takes him a little while to master something that's going to get him playing time.
So you sort of slid this in there, but do you think there's a legitimate chance that Mitch Lightfoot ends up with kind of a mid-career redshirt?
I think someone has to redshirt. I think you can't is a strong word. I don't think you're going to go into the season with 12 guys.
Yeah.
I think that's just too many. You're not going to be able to play 12 guys a game. So I think if you're looking at a redshirt candidate, I would probably throw out Mitch Lightfoot or Christian Brown. Christian Brown looked good in the scrimmage, but it could be one of those things where, hey, let's save you. You know, let's save a year of your eligibility. Let's get you, you know, physically ready. Let's get you more ready to shoot, you know, the further back three-point line.
Mm-hmm.
There's some things that I think maybe Brown could benefit from a red shirt, but also Lightfoot, you know, if he's going into what will be a senior year, if he's like, ooh, I'm not going to get a ton of playing time as a senior, maybe I red shirt and come back for a senior year without, you know, most likely without Doak and Silvio De Sousa, where then you're maybe backing up a David McCormick and then another big if KU brings one in the class mm-hmm. of 2020. So I think that those are the two of the guys that probably are the closest going to redshirt. I don't think you're redshirting Dave McCormick. You're not redshirting a five-star, or at least an All-American. I don't remember his star ranking. And I don't think you're going to redshirt a Tristan Anarumo because mm-hmm. he's your second highest rated recruit in this recruiting class.
Right.
So I think that those are two guys that I don't think you can really redshirt. So just really kind of by elimination, just leaves Lightfoot and Brown.
That's really interesting. I hadn't considered the redshirting this late in the game is really strange, but Mitch Lightfoot's situation is really unique. So that's really interesting. Okay, so again, I may end up trying to bully you into a football question, but I'm not sure. It might really be more convincing myself. But I do want to talk to you about the article that came out a few days ago about, the headline from CBSSports.com is at least six college basketball programs will be notified of major NCAA violations by this summer. I think a couple of them could be coming even sooner than that. I find this interesting, and it has to come up in a Kansas conversation because you get the whole Silvio De Sousa saga. You've had all of these things going on with Adidas, which KU is obviously an Adidas school. I also tend to be of the mind that if you are a successful college basketball program, you're probably nervous right now and probably should be because somewhere along the line, you're almost certainly doing something wrong. Is that something that's front of mind for you right now, or is it a wait-and-see sort of situation?
I'm going to make a comparison. I think it's a lot like, you know, winter is coming in Game of Thrones. This whole thing started in September of 2017 with
right.
Louisville kind of getting the first taste of the blood.
Right.
And, you know, we're going on 2 years since
yeah.
then, and there's not really been a whole lot on a school level.
Mm-hmm.
There's been a lot of stuff on individual levels. You see someone like Silvio De Sousa and his whole case that has been seen. But I think on the broader level of the schools, I'm sure that there will be stuff that comes out this summer. I do not doubt Dennis Dawes' report, and he is very well sourced, and I entirely believe what he is writing here.
Mm-hmm.
But I struggle to believe that they're going to go after, you know, the Kansases, you know, and programs like that. But also, if you look at kind of the other schools that are involved in this, you know, there's Arizona with the DeAndre Ayton situation.
Mm-hmm.
There is Louisville with the Brian Bowen situation. You know, in Kansas, the situation was basically Billy Preston and Silvio De Sousa.
Mm-hmm.
Silvio De Sousa has since been cleared, and Billy Preston did not play a game for Kansas.
Yeah.
So I'm not really sure how much it can affect Kansas at this point, unless there is other stuff that we don't necessarily know about. I saw that the wiretap with assistant coach Curtis Townsend talking about, what it would take for Zion Williamson to come to Kansas, like that wasn't allowed into the investigation because it was not allowed into court. And so therefore the NCAA was not allowed to use it.
Mm.
So that isn't even something that can come back to bite Kansas, for lack of a better term.
Mm-hmm.
So I struggle to find the angle where the NCAA is going to be able to punish Kansas because all of the different, you know, ways that they could have been kind of taken care of or are no longer valid.
So this is that's very objective and very helpful. I'm now asking you this very subjectively, and I think there are probably reasonable people that could disagree on this. But if I was to say that we are going to, I'm going to snap my fingers like Thanos, and every sin throughout college basketball is going to come to the surface. What percentage of major collegiate basketball programs would have some sort of rules violation on their hands?
Oh, wow. Okay. So if you're looking at, that's tough. So if we're just going to look at Power Five, let's go with
that. Yeah.
I'd probably go with, I don't know, 50% maybe.
Like, oh, really?
Teams at probably like the top half. You look at your Dukes, your Kansases, because there is as shown that Josh Jackson and Billy Preston
yeah.
you know, had money given to them by Adidas people. You know, you look at those kind of schools, they have some. But I'm not necessarily sure if the West Virginias of the world, if the Syracuse of the world, unless I'm totally missing a Syracuse violation in the past 5 or 10 years. But it feels like, you know, it's a lot more of the top half schools that are doing this because it keeps them competitive. And that's just how it works in college basketball, is that, you know, if you look at the whole, like, Zion thing, for example, if you look at what came out on that wiretap that wasn't admitted to evidence, it's like, okay, so did he go to Duke for free? You know, like, huh?
Right.
So
right.
There are certain things that it's like, okay, a lot of the top half schools do this to get the top recruits. I'm sure that, I mean, even Creighton got involved in this.
Yeah, well, but I don't remember what Maryland was trying to give money to Silvio De Sousa. Like, and Memphis is like smells right now.
God.
I mean, yeah. I don't, my inclination to my own question would have been to just say 100%, because I think, and maybe he'd have to get to the smallest, you know, letter of the law type of thing to meet my standard. But I just have a hard time. I have a hard time looking at, again, like Maryland having money in a bag ready for Silvio De Sousa, and they are not one of the powerhouses.
Yeah, and that is true. I will actually, now that you, that is very true. I'd probably go with probably actually 65-70% now that I think about it a little bit more. But I still am not entirely convinced that the Rutgers of the world are paying players, or, you know, again, like TCU maybe, you know, or have some stuff going on with, you know, if they want to try and get high level recruits. But I just am not convinced that some of the bottom tier Power Five schools are in this. Memphis is an entirely different discussion. I think also something that is helped Memphis is the fact that it is Penny Hardaway,
sure,
you know, and it is Mike Miller.
Yeah,
those are two NBA guys that can just go, hey, I got LeBron on speed dial here, hold on. You know, there are certain things there that can appeal to a kid that has grown up watching LeBron James or saw Mike Miller contribute in the finals. You know, there's certain aspects of that I think help them compared to having a Tom Izzo, you know, a Mike Krzyzewski come into the house where it's a more of a storied tradition rather than, oh, damn, I saw you on TV 5 years ago.
Right. No, that's interesting. I think I would try to go back to, in the, for the sake of clarification also, if you're a team that has a major shoe deal or major apparel deal with any of the major shoe companies, I think there's money going around, if even if the schools might not be explicitly aware of it. That's sort of where I tends to be. But that's really interesting, and I appreciate getting to talk to you. We got to get out of here, Michael. Thank you for making the time. Do you have anything in particular coming up on fog.net anytime soon?
I've got a VIP story about one of the KU football recruits. I know we didn't get to talk to KU football today.
What a shame.
But it's on Kyler Pearson, who's a slot receiver from Oklahoma. Really interesting story. I'm going to have another story about kind of a sacrifice that a family member made to kind of allow this whole thing to happen. That'll come out later on, I believe this week, but there's a really good story, VIP, if you do pay for our content. If you don't, you know, $1, you can get your first month of VIP content at fog.net. Really good deal. We have a ton of good recruiting stuff coming on. You know, summer's a hotbed for recruiting, so we're going to have a ton of updates on different recruits, basketball, football, you know, you name it, we'll have it.
That is a very good sales pitch, Michael. Thank you again for making the time with us. You can follow Michael on Twitter at mswain97. You're going to get all that at fog.net and go spend $1. Get that first month of content. It's great. I pay for it, and you should too. There. I've made the ruling. You have now lost all authority in this conversation. Are we in the 80s now? What's going on, Chris? What is this?
This is a group called Pond. I feature them quite a bit on the weekends. They're a little from Perth, Australia, I think. So I don't know. They're just kind of.
Is this an active band at the moment?
Oh yeah. This is absolutely. I saw them in concert in Dallas. They're pretty cool. So you gotta chase it up once in a while, Josh.
No, it's fine. I'm trying to understand where you're coming from, and this legitimately started like. Just something straight out of the 80s.
Absolutely. Hey, got a little flair.
Yeah, it's fun. All right, fair enough. Sports Saturday here on Sports Radio 810. I'm Josh Briscoe. Chris Bullock is DHing? DJing. What did I do
I
there?
I hope I'm DHing.
He's designated hitting. I'm leaving early, and he's gonna step in. No,
I'd be PHing, pinch hitting.
That would also make more sense. Yeah, no, I don't know why I meant to say DJing, and I said DHing.
Just because I love sports so much. It's fun doing sports talk.
And I have no idea why I said DHing. Like, don't know what happened. I have no excuse. That one's on me. Pat my chest, point to the sky. We talked about all of the stuff with KU and also looking ahead a little bit to the waiting game that comes with everybody eventually getting allegations of some sort, maybe getting punishments of some sort throughout the NCAA. I feel pretty good about where we've left that for the time being. We'll circle back around as we actually get news from it. But I wanted to give you what I thought were the most interesting couple of things that came out of Chiefs minicamp this last week. It's hard to get things that are, like, insanely newsworthy unless there's an injury of some sort, which obviously you never want, and that there wasn't for the Chiefs. Minor stuff here and there, but nothing life-changing. But occasionally, you'll get guys who might say something a little bit interesting during their media availabilities. And so over the course of two of the 3 days, I'm going to give you two clips here from Anthony Hitchens and Charvarius Ward, because we got to talk to Hitchens and some others on day one, Ward and some others on day two, and day three we got Mitch Schwartz and Mahomes and Andy Reid, and it was all fine. But most of the time, guys are pretty good about not saying anything terribly interesting, because if you say something newsworthy in a media availability, you've generally made a mistake of some sort. At least, you know, in the minds of them, in the minds of the organization, all that. That's just the game that we always play. You know, we go out there and try to get something newsworthy. They go out there to try to say nothing newsworthy, but we all agree that they're going to have media availability over the course of, you know, practices and training camps and the season and all of that. It's an interesting setup that we've got here. But from Anthony Hitchens, back on day one, we got some interesting stuff out of the gate, where he was asked about how Steve Spagnuolo's new system is coming together and how it is to learn it and everything. And just as sort of background info here, he answered a couple of questions about the complexity, and he said it's not a difficult system. It's simple to learn, and you know what he's doing, but it's obviously still gotten results for Spagnuolo. But he talked about it being kind of a, you know, one-gap responsibility system, which I found to be an interesting thing to clarify, because I think it's pretty clear that wasn't the case with Bob Sutton last year. We talked a lot about that defense being very complicated, and not in a way that where you say, oh, this is complex, but complicated as in, like, confused, because it seems to leave especially the linebackers confused more often than not, where it seems like they would very oftentimes be trying to process things from Anthony Hitchens' perspective and then have to wait and read. And by the time they reacted, it was already, you know, a 7-yard gain. So he talked about sort of Spagnuolo specifically, but I thought it was in his very last answer of the day that he began to give the most insightful look at why he likes what Spagnuolo is doing. And I think it reflects very clearly on what Bob Sutton did last year.
Yeah, simple is good for a lot of players, good for a lot of coaches. You know exactly, you know, who's right and who's wrong. It's no, well, he could have did this, that. It was like, okay, you have the A-gap, you got the A-gap. So it's simplified. So when we go to watch film and we go to get better, I don't need the coach behind me watching film with me. I know, okay, I had the A-gap, I didn't have the A-gap on that play. So it's very simple in that way, and we can correct ourselves on the field. We can correct ourselves by watching film on our own. It's not too complicated. So I just think that right there will make us improve so much more, you know, as a defense, not have to go back and, you know, watch film as a group. You can just do it on your own time, and then just ask questions when you get in the next day.
It's a really interesting clarification that he makes. It's a really interesting reflection to say, you know, in this defense, we don't have to watch film with the coach behind us. Essentially, in my mind, saying translating what it is that they're looking at. If you're a defender that feels like they can't watch game tape on their own because looking back on the game and on their assignments and using all the context clues, they still can't even be sure that they know if they did the right thing or the wrong thing, they can look at the film and still not know what was the call here. Where was I supposed to be? We've got to watch this as a group so the coaches can say, now this is what was supposed to happen and here's where it went wrong. I just think that is a like, stunning and fascinating, like, look into just how convoluted it all must have seemed to him and to the rest of the defense last year, where you shouldn't need a translator to know what your defense is doing. Now, listen, we might pivot on this in 6 months. We might be looking at this team in December and say, oh, man, you know, they clearly had a defense that got solved by opposing offenses, and then Spagnuolo never recalibrated. But even if this is just very simple now, because this is the first install of this defense, if it gets a little more, you know, get a wrinkle thrown in here or there throughout the season and throughout hopefully multiple seasons, which I think is fair to expect that will be the case, you might be able to feel good about the evolution while still now acknowledging the healthiness that is being able to teach these core guys. Hitchens is going to be here for a while. Frank Clark's going to be here for a while. I imagine Chris Jones will be here for a while. We'll see if we have time to talk about him at some point. We definitely will talk to him, talk about him with Matt Derrick coming up here in about 20 minutes or so. You're installing this defense at the base level, and Spagnuolo is taking guys off to the side and teaching them one-on-one, and we'll hear from Charvarius Ward here in a second as well. I think he had the most interesting clip of the week because he painted a very clear picture of last year to this year. Well, we're using the Hitchens one first because I want you to kind of get the taste and some of the conspiracy theorizing that we were doing that day. And then we'll take a break here in a second and come back and listen to this Charvarius Ward clip that's going to, I think, kind of blow what Hitchens said up to another level where it's very clear what's going on. But I don't think we're going to actually have a problem around here with Spagnuolo not doing enough. I think he will. I think that his evolving defense will be easy to see. But for right now, especially when you look at the modern NFL and the job of a linebacker in the modern NFL, a guy like Anthony Hitchens, he can't just sit there in the middle of the field and wait, you know, two beats into the play and not know where he's going. It might be a little bit easier to counter for an offense if you're pretty sure that you know that this guy has this gap, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But it removes so much uncertainty from the defense to not even... You might even think that there's merit to the philosophy that Bob Sutton had, which was to throw a lot at these guys, which is to in turn throw a lot at opposing offenses. There might be merit to that in your mind. But if you realize that your players can't keep up with whatever convolution you've thrown their way, you have a tremendous problem. And I think we've seen that with different linebackers specifically. And basically everybody except for Derek Johnson in his prime has really struggled in Bob Sutton's defense. Again, especially from that linebacker position. And whenever you realize that whatever it is that you're doing, maybe Bob Sutton's a genius. I don't know. Maybe if he had robots executing his defense, that he would be the greatest defensive coordinator of our time. I don't tend to think that's the case, but let's say that it is. You have to realize you're not playing with robots here, where if Anthony Hitchens, a guy who's been in the league for a little while, feels like he can't watch his own film without you over his shoulder translating, that's a pretty big indictment. You're at the very least, your communication with your players is absolutely atrocious.
And I think with Sutton, it was more so he was making the communication, because he was running very basic defenses. A lot of
it wasn't
man
terribly,
under two over the top, and as an offense, you could easily dissect this. He was making it so difficult for these guys, depending on what the formation was from the offense, depending on, you know, is there two backs, is there, you know, one back sets, whatever it may be. That instead of simplifying it and making it, okay, this is your read. You look at the tight end, you look at whatever the tight end's doing. If you have him, if he makes this step or that step, then that's your key for this play or whatnot. It became too, as you said, expansive in terms of what the offense was doing, instead of focusing on what your key is as an individual player and then going from there.
So you may say that perhaps there was a communication or
we've been talking about that the whole time. I'm just saying,
you know,
I think
you know who else talked about that?
You.
Charvarius Ward. This is a radio tease. You're just a step ahead, Chris. Right now, you're Anthony Hitchens in a Steve Spagnuolo defense, and I need you to be Anthony Hitchens in a Bob Sutton defense.
Yes,
I need you to be one step slower to the point of attack.
True.
Because whenever we come back, we are going to lean into that a little bit more, because that is almost exactly where Charvarius Ward takes things, where I do think there's a schematic conversation and a problem with some of the choices Bob Sutton was making outside of the communication as far as what he wanted to ask these linebackers specifically to do. But in Charvarius Ward's case, there were issues outside of that, and he was very clear about the problems that came throughout that defense. So whenever we come back here on Sports Saturday on Sports Radio 810, I'll let you hear what Charvarius Ward had to say, and I think it'll paint an even clearer picture of the problems with the defense from last year. Just be Shazam, Chris. Just play a song and then just say name and artist. Someone tweeted in to ask what the last band was. It was Pond.
Pond.
Just go ahead and impress your music tastes on the rest of the world and tell us all where they can find it, how they can follow you.
Neon Indian, that's the group that we are playing right now, and the song is called Annie. If you want to follow me on Spotify, just look up Chris Bullock.
Are you actually on Spotify?
Yeah, that's like my main source of listening to podcasts/music. So.
No, but are you putting together? Are you curating a little? Is there a little,
I have like a bunch of playlists that I have like that people that are public that people can listen
to.
You
probably ought to put together just sort of the weekend's playlist action that you're putting together. I feel like people would. I would probably follow that.
Yeah,
I tend to like what we play.
I've looked into that. So
it's just always disconcerting for me because again, it's not one of the 30 songs that usually plays before I start talking. So I'm always trying to like cope with the new thing. But then I'm generally like, actually, this is kind of a bop. I just wasn't ready for it.
Yeah. No. Yeah. I'll start putting that together. See what I can come together with, and we'll get it up on the Spotify, just maybe like a weekend 810 weekend playlist.
Yeah, I like that. I think that's a good idea.
So,
okay, let's go to Charvarius Ward because I don't have a ton of time and I want to play this audio. We talked about this last segment. If you miss any of the show at any point, it'll all be up at 810WHB.com. I don't know, by the end of the show, is it up? Some of it up now, whatever.
It's up to Chris.
Oh, look at that. Look, Chris is a freaking machine, my man. We got Matt Derrick coming up in just a couple of minutes. Talk to Michael Swain about KU. We talked about OJ Simpson's Twitter account in the first hour. So if you miss any of it at any point, 810WHB.com. You can go to the 810 mobile app, get additional programming. That'll be today's 3 hours up in there. But we talked about last segment what Anthony Hitchens said at minicamp. Listen to what Charvarius Ward had to say as he was talking about the advantages to Steve Spagnuolo and this year's defensive coaching staff.
Oh, it's a lot more communicating, a lot more teaching. I mean, it's a brand new defense, so everybody learning right now. But they're more enthusiastic and better teachers. So yeah.
Do you find it harder or easier? Because some of the guys yesterday said they actually found it kind of easy to learn. What do you feel about how the learning process is?
I mean, the coach is just the communication. It's a lot better. Like, it's a whole lot better than it was last year. I mean, this year we having a lot more fun as players. The coaches also, they get excited. We get excited. So they're better communicators.
There is no doubt what he's talking about because he said than last year. And frankly, like, I appreciate it. Like, I don't want to, like, make Charvarius Ward afraid of talking to the media again. I appreciate that he's honest. You know, Anthony Hitchens at one point said, like, I don't want to talk about last year. We're talking about last year. And for Ward, like, it's, I just very much appreciate the fact that he's saying clearly, yeah, last year there were teaching problems, there were communication problems, and I think there's always you can have this conversation in a number of places or any number of ways or whatever, but you could be a great teacher, but if your class isn't learning, like there is a problem, like maybe you're not that great of a teacher. And, you know, you can figure out on some level if maybe you're a great college professor, but you can't figure out how to teach elementary school kids. Like, that's, you know, that's something. But if you're Bob Sutton, an NFL defensive coordinator, and you can't teach the Chiefs defense what you're trying to teach them, that is gonna reflect on you, and rightfully so. For Ward to say that this is more fun, again, better teaching, better communicating, that's a very good sign. It's what we were getting at last segment, where I felt like we were kind of leading up and leading up and leading up throughout last year, and with what Anthony Hitchens said, and then Ward came in and was like, yeah, man, this is what it was. And so now it is these guys, it's Spagnuolo specifically. I saw back during OTA, so it would have been last a week ago from Thursday, I guess. At one point, I saw Ward off to the side with his helmet in his hand. That's how I'm working with the coach one-on-one. I thought that was kind of interesting. And you know, it's a relatively new staff, so I didn't immediately go, oh, that's this person or this person or this person. Oh, who is that? Which coach is that? And I looked in, and it was – I looked closer, and I heard him yelling, oh, that's Steve Spagnuolo. Like, the rest of the team is practicing right now, but Spagnuolo has got Ward off to the side, working with him on some technique thing at the line of scrimmage right there because – that's what I think Spagnuolo likes to do. And from what we've heard from all the defenders, even as their positions have been different and even their perspectives have been different, you know, Hitchens said he does worry about everybody else in the defense because he's the linebacker. That's his job. For Kendall Fuller, he said he got to just cut his own grass. But all of them seem to say that this is a well-taught and well-communicated and relatively simple defense. And this team has good players on it. It had good players on it last year, too. So I think a simplification of everything is really important and really exciting for this defense. Talking about that and a lot more with Matt Derrick of Chiefs Digest whenever we come back here on Sports Saturday on Sports Radio 810.